Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
Daryl Ryder joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Daryl.
Good morning, guys.
Daryl, you've been willing to call the cops on anybody who's been a little bit too close for comfort out there in West Park?
I've been avoiding humanity in West Park, so I have not had that thought cross my mind, to be perfectly honest.
Daryl's keeping him at a distance, the way we like Daryl and the way Daryl likes all of us. Daryl, first off, before we get into some real meaty news here, you had the perfect season, the 16 Browns games to watch on NFL Game Pass, the top win since 2009. They're available to stream now. You can check out that website. You check out his article on that, 923thefan.com. We checked it out. Now, are these in order? So the number one is December 10th, 2009. Is that in order, or are you just putting them out there willy-nilly, like 16 and you can pick?
No, I put them in chronological order, so it'd just be easier for people to actually search for the games. I didn't rank any of them. I guess I could go back if I get bored at some point and actually rank them, but I wanted to make it really easily searchable, of course, with the Game Pass games from 2009 to present are available. So there's about a 11 season window there because games before 2009 aren't available. Obviously, there were multiple games before that I would have loved to include, but this was just games that people could actually hop online and binge watch that actually put them in a good mood. And let me tell you guys, I had 47 victories to choose from over that time span. This was not an easy task to come up with this list of 16 perfect games for the Cleveland Browns.
What was your personal favorite? Which one?
There were a couple. The Josh Cribbs, two kickoffs for a touchdown game against the Chiefs in 2009 was one of my big favorites. Josh McCown, franchise record, 457-yard passing game against Baltimore in 2015 was one of my all-time favorites. And then, of course, Baker Mayfield's debut, they were down 14-0, and then he comes in the second quarter. The entire stadium comes alive. And, of course, the Browns ended that long winless streak. I think it was 19 games and over 630 days between wins.
Daryl Ryder joined us on the hotline. Let's be honest here. The best wins were all during the Brian Hoyer era. We all know that, Daryl. Let's stop beating around the bush.
But I picked like three or four games from that season, Anthony.
It is a crazy year because our fan base was so divided over Hoyer versus Manziel. You had the young fans, they wanted to see Manziel. And I get that. He was a first-round draft pick. And Hoyer was not particularly great, let's be honest, but they were winning games, and they got out to a 7-4 start. To me, that game on the road, and I reference it all the time, sometimes in jest, but at this point, since we're bringing up all the best wins, they had come from behind a record-setting amount. I think it was at 25 points. At one point, the ball was put in Canton because it was a road comeback victory record.
That was the game at Tennessee, and that did make the list.
Yeah, that to me always stuck with me. And then the fact that they were able to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers that year as well. was a huge win. So I think that year is criminally underrated. It kind of gets lost in the shuffle, I think, all the time because they collapsed and they had the terrible game against the Colts. Hoyer was really bad, and the wheels fell off once you had the offensive line. What was it? The injury to
Alex Mack went down
Alex
against
Mack.
The Steelers.
That was the killer. That sabotaged that season. But I think that season really gets lost at times.
Yeah, it does. And I took a peek. I picked four games from the 2014 season. The comeback against the Titans, 25 points down. The shellacking they gave the Steelers, beating them by 21. Of course, Alex Mack did get injured in that game. When they went to Cincinnati, Thursday Night Football improved to 6-3, which was like their best start in 20 years, and they just manhandled the Bengals. And then, as I put it, the beginning of the end, they go down. Josh Gordon comes back from suspension, doesn't run a single right route the entire game. Brian Hoyer throws a three interceptions. They end up kicking a field goal as time expires to beat the Atlanta Falcons. And then they go on to lose 50 of the next 55 games. So,
and oh my God. That,
50 of, course, of 55.
Oh. Yeah.
I got one thing to add in there, and Lima, I'll let you take it away again. But I just realized we've had two seasons come to an end because of wins over the Steelers. This last year, and then that Alex Mack game where Alex Mack got hurt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, I never thought about
That's
it like that.
That's sobering. Go ahead, Anthony. I'm sorry.
All right, the other one that comes to mind, even though it was one that it was on TV in the background, I was paying attention kind of, but we were eating, was the Christmas Eve game against the Chargers when, what, Christian Kirksey that year said they were not going to go 0-16, and they end up beating the Chargers in a game where I was barely paying attention until the final 3 minutes where you felt you had to, and it was, again, Phillip Rivers trying to bring the Chargers from behind, and he couldn't do it.
Well, and Jamie Meter, as Joe Thomas called him, the pierogi prince of Parma, ultimately not only saved the Browns from 0-16, but he saved them from a 35-game losing streak. Had he not blocked that field goal, the Browns would have gone on to lose 35 straight games. They lost 34 of 35 games. That's how preposterous the Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson era was. But, I tried to put together just, you know, because we're all cooped up in our houses and people are binge-watching Tiger King and all these crazy shows and stuff. So I just figured I'd give Browns fans something fun to do as they were killing time. But, yeah, for as miserable as Browns football has been for 20 years, there have been some really fun games and some bright spots for fans to enjoy.
El Dangerous One joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Up to some current news, Adrian Claiborne signed. Lima pays attention to the Reddit. I don't. He was looking at Falcons fans Reddit. He says they're upset about this. They really liked him down in Atlanta, and they wanted to maybe keep him a little bit longer term. Two-year deal, if I'm not mistaken, $6 million. How much does this help this Browns defensive front? And maybe what does it mean for Olivier Vernon there, Daryl?
Yeah, I don't know. It means that Olivier Vernon's, on any type of bubble or not going to be here. I'm still convinced, and obviously, I think if they were going to move on from Olivier Vernon, they would have done it by now. But he had a really good year. He's going to be this will be his 10th NFL season. Played really well. I certainly understand why Falcons fans are upset. Played the last 4 of the 5 years. Had a cup of coffee 1 year up in New England with the Patriots, but last year, Ken, 4 sacks, hit the quarterback 7 times, forced a couple of fumbles. He's not a starter, and that's why I say I don't think that affects Olivier Vernon's status, but he is a really good situational pass rusher, and 3.5 career sacks on the resume. He gets to the quarterback. He hits the quarterback. He comes up with, tackles for loss. So he makes some impact plays. So I really like the signing by Andrew Berry. I think it's one that gives them some additional depth on the edge and also provides them with another weapon to get after the quarterback.
Daryl, there has been speculation about whether this is a leverage play for the Browns, trying to convince Olivier Vernon to take a pay cut. To me, hey, look, yeah, try to get him to take a pay cut, whatever. Not my money, and the cap situation is still very favorable for the next few years, or for this year especially, for the Browns. I hope that they don't decide that if Olivier Vernon doesn't take a pay cut, that they just cut him, and now all of a sudden a signing that was supposed to be about depth becomes a signing that's supposed to be about a starter. That would make no sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Anthony. And this guy isn't a starter. He's played 110 games in his career, and he's basically started half of them, 52 starts for him. So I don't view Claiborne as a starter, just, you know, from my perspective. I agree wholeheartedly with you. I certainly hope that Andrew Berry doesn't view him as a starter either, because he seems to have had his success as a role player, and to me, you'd be putting a player on the field in a position that they probably are not best suited for, and that would be a reserve as a starter.
They officially ratified with the owners yesterday, Daryl, to extend the playoffs starting this coming football season. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, certainly, obviously, Browns fans should be real happy about that. That increases the odds under the format. The only year the Browns, though, would have made the playoffs would be that 2007 season when Indianapolis decided not to play anyone that night, and the Browns got held out of the playoffs after a 10-6 year. I also, though, think that the road to winning a Super Bowl becomes a little tougher, because all but two teams have to win four games. And I hate to be Debbie Downer too snarky about this, but the Browns have had many a season where they have struggled to win four games in a season, and they would have to do that in a postseason. So I think that that becomes very difficult unless they secure that number one seed. But I really think down the stretch, it increases the level of competition in some games, because you're going to have these playoff teams fighting for the number one seed, and you're also going to be having, you know, teams fighting for that extra playoff spot. And I really do think fans are going to love having a triple header, both on Wild Card Saturday as well as Wild Card Sunday, to watch. So playoffs, don't really have a problem with them doing this. I still hate the fact, though, that they're going to eventually add a 17th regular season game.
You really don't like that, huh?
No, I don't. I had this conversation before, but, you know, let's be honest about it. Teams like the Browns, they have struggled just to get through the 16-game schedule. It's a health and safety thing for me. It's a quality of the product thing for me. I'm all for expanding the playoffs. That's fine. You get two extra teams in there, makes the end of the regular season a little more compelling in some respects, makes more games down the stretch competitive and relevant. But to me, adding that 17th game, I think the league is certainly playing with fire. You have teams, again, like the Browns, who've had to use four, five, six quarterbacks in a 16-game season. And I can tell you, just going back and looking at Browns history, they would then need a seventh quarterback to get through that 17th game. So I'm not a fan of the expanded regular season, not by any stretch.
All right, Daryl, one final note. They unveiled the NFL draft helmets, or the hats, I should say, for this year. And on the Cleveland Browns, it featured the Brownie Elf, a new-looking, modern Brownie Elf. What'd you think?
Well, first, people are misconstruing the look of Brownie. What the league did, all the hats are black. At least they look black to me. And they went with a neon sign-style design on all the hats, because the draft was supposed to be in Las Vegas, and that was their little, you know, homage to the strip and the neon signs and everything out there. So that's number one. It's not that they changed the look of Brownie. What they did was they put the Brownie logo on the hat as a neon sign. I personally thought it was pretty cool. I love the fact that the Brownie is going to be used a little more on merchandise and going to be visible on equipment on the sidelines, shirts, hats, whatever, coats and that. It sure beats having a helmet on a jacket, you know, a picture of a helmet that the Browns have basically used for, you know, 50 years or whatever. And I'll remind people that the Brownie dates back to the origination of the franchise. Okay. It is basically the first logo the team ever used. They won 8 championships using the Brownie Elf logo. They have no championships with a boring orange helmet as a logo. I like it personally. I know it's a polarizing topic among fans. I've said for years that the Browns needed a logo of some kind to identify the team. Every time you watch them on TV, the graphics are either the Oreo stripe or just an orange block or the helmet. So I think incorporating the Brownie into the overall palette, I guess, the design palette of the Browns, I'm a huge fan because I like the logo, and then also too because of the historical value related to it. And to me, when I look at the Brownie Elf, I think about all the championships the Browns used to win.
Daryl, I love you. I thank you very much for that because I agree with it wholeheartedly, and I love you even more for it. Even though there's a lot of people saying I'm crazy and dumb and stupid and all that other stuff because I like the Brownie Elf. But you know what, Daryl? We don't have to worry about those folks.
Here's the thing. The argument about, oh, well, the Brownie's not tough and stuff. There are other mascots. The horseshoe's not tough. Works for the Indianapolis Colts, right? Lightning Bolt's tough. Works for the now Los Angeles Chargers. The logo the Rams just put out there don't look tough. I love it. I think it's great, and I'm glad the Browns are going to use it a little more.
All right, Daryl, hope to see you again soon. But until then, we'll talk again at another time, buddy.
You got it, guys. Have a great week.
You too. The Dangerous One, Daryl Ryder, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Will Brinson going to join us. We'll talk NFL with him. We'll talk about the NFL draft, whether or not it's a good idea or a bad idea to extend the playoffs. Also coming up, those 16 games, the best that you could watch on NFL Game Pass. We'll pick our best, and they're officially moving up the Jordan documentary. It's Ken Carmen with Anthony Lima, live on The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.